So some of you may recognize my last name, some of you may not. My dad's a preacher. I'm the oldest son of a pastor. And when I was young, I thought that this meant I had a very different upbringing. I thought I was, I'll be honest, I thought I was just unfortunate. Man, I want to be normal, I want to be like the other kids. But I get older and I realize that my upbringing wasn't very different from a lot of you. A lot of you who have strong Christian parents, my upbringing was very similar. Whether it be Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, VBS, church camp, or anything in between, I was there, no questions asked. I'm sure like a lot of you, you're there, no questions asked. And maybe like some of you here today, I hated it. Don't worry, parents, there's a good ending to this story. I'm here on my own free will. When I was around 5 years old, I made a profession of faith with my dad. At the time, I didn't fully understand what I was saying, but I knew that it made my family happy and it seemed like the thing to do. This was the start of a faith. The foundation was built on confusion. I had a lot of questions that I never asked, and I can't blame anyone for that except myself. If you have questions, ask your parents. They will be happy to share with you. Don't go through life being confused at a young age and never asking these questions, because building anything on confusion is not a successful plan. I do construction with this guy right here, and we deal with a lot of foundations, and if they're not right, everything that goes up is not going to be right. So at a young age, all I knew was the church. And on top of this, I was spending my time at a Christian school as well. So I was fully in this. And at a young age, I didn't always love church. I didn't like the tension. And whenever I was at church, I was the pastor's kid. So people would come up and talk to me constantly, and I was very shy. I remember I would go and I'd hide in the bathroom until service started. For years, so I'd just be trying to stay away from all the adults. But as time passed, a slow disdain started for me in the church and Christian school. And I could remember my dad preaching and the Sunday schools, and everyone would mention the world, like the world, like what the world's doing. And there was a curiosity I had for what that meant. I was confused that there was more people than not living a different lifestyle and doing things that I was told was wrong. And as I grew older, I became more and more curious about what this was. And then in my early teens, I wanted to leave the Christian school. Friends around me would leave and go to a public school, and they'd tell me about the things they'd see and the things they would do. And this is what I wanted. I was insatiably curious about this. And it was around this time that I fell in. I didn't understand what it was at the time, but into a very deep depression. And I would go through the days, and I would feel nothing. I would feel very, very empty inside. And I didn't tell anyone about this. I never sought any guidance or help. And in my mind, I connected this with the church and with Christianity. So I must be feeling empty because I'm being sheltered from all the fun things that everyone else is able to do. I connected those two, and there was an anger inside of me that grew. And as this grew, I only felt more disdain and anger for the church. I really struggled in school at this age. I didn't care if my pastor failed. I would just go, and I'd go home. And the only thing I would look forward to all day was to go to sleep. That's where I was at a young age. But then I was finally able to convince my parents to send me to a public school. And when I did, I got the first taste of the world. I got to see what was out there. And as soon as I tasted that, I was hooked. That's what I was wanting for so long, and that's finally what I got. And I thought that this, if I can continue in this, this will fill the void I have inside of me. So around the age of 15, 16, I became a Christian actor. And I'll say this right now, it's a lot easier to act like a Christian than be a Christian. I know that for a fact. I acted it for a very long time. I knew my role. I knew you go to church when it's time to go to church, sing when it's time to sing, pray when it's time to pray, and smile when it's time to smile. And you could fool everyone except God. And that's where I was at for a very long time. Who I was at school and who I was at church were two completely different people. I would act one way at school. I would be who I wanted to be, and then at church I would turn it off just like that. But the truth is, that's where my heart had been for years. Since I was young, my heart was in the world, and I wanted nothing to do with the church. I would be sitting in church, and physically, yes, my body would be sitting there, but mentally it was 1,000 miles away. And it was around this age, 15, 16, 17, that I began to dive into new philosophies and religions. I became fascinated by everything else out there that people believed. I found atheists, I found agnostics, and I began to try to convince myself that they were right, and everything that I was told growing up was wrong. If I was able to do this, I could justify the living I wanted to have. What I wanted to do could be justified if there is no God. So around the age of 17, 18, I became an atheist. Obviously, I didn't tell anyone. That wouldn't go over very well if you know my dad at all. So I kept that one on the back burner for a few years. But the last couple years of high school, there was a passion growing inside of me to leave the church and to leave home. These are things I'm ashamed of because I was a liar for a very long time. You could have had a conversation with me and you would not have known. Thousands of people I would have talked to over the years that came in and out of the church and they never would have known. But I was never able to fully fool my family or God. So in the back of my mind, I knew that eventually a breaking point was coming. I wasn't going to be able to live this way forever. I was going to be found out. As I was about to graduate high school, the day was fastly approaching. And when I became 19, I was full of hate and just bitterness towards my family and the church. And I can't look back and blame anyone but myself. I can't look at the church and say there was one person who said something to me who set me off. I can't blame anyone except me. I wanted to live a sinful life. I wanted everything the world had to offer. All the songs I listen to, all the movies I'm watching, everything else seems so cool. And like, I don't want to be in church. This is not what everyone tells me is the cool thing to do. This is not what I want to live. I thought that the church was the shackles and chains on my life. I thought it was holding me back. I thought that void I felt inside was the church that was holding me back from what would actually satisfy me and make me happy. So at the age of 19, I wanted to move away as far as possible, and I set my sights on South Carolina and ended up moving to Charleston. But that wasn't before me and my dad had it out, and I didn't leave on the best terms with him. My ego didn't allow me to leave gracefully. I left and it crushed me inside, and I blamed my dad for making me leave, and I was very angry. I couldn't accept that it was my sin and my ego that was the separation between me and my family. All sin is a separation from God and your Christian family that loves you. All my family wanted to see was for me to be in Christ and close to home, but I couldn't do it. I said I couldn't believe it. It took me no time at all after moving to South Carolina to dive into hedonism and materialism. I followed my own pleasures and started to do everything I wanted. I was finally free with zero constrictions. I could finally fill this void that I had always felt inside of me. I could finally be at peace, I thought. Satan gave me everything that I had always wanted. So sometimes we wonder, things may go right in your life, and if you're not a Christian, you may think, oh, I did this. I fell into a good paying job. I found a lot of friends, and I feel like Satan had set me up with everything I wanted. And I was like, this is it. I'm free. I can do what I want. My family's 600 miles away. I'm living the life. I had every vice at my fingertips. And I finally got what I was always yearning for. It was finally living. I was doing what I heard about in the songs and the movies. And I'm like, now I can finally be happy. Now I can finally be whole. And I can remember distinctly, I'd been down there for probably half a year. And I'm doing everything, and I remember the voice of my dad in the back of my head in a sermon. He talked about how sin has its seasons. He said, sin has its seasons. Initially, it's the allure that draws you in, and the initial sin, that's what you get. And at first, it's great. But there's consequences to sin, and I hadn't realized it yet. I hadn't realized that what I was doing, I had payments to pay. And for a short amount of time, I was happy, and I had a victory lap. But my victory was very short-lived. Recently, I was listening to a Billy Graham sermon, and he was speaking to young people at a college quite a few years back. And he said, young people, and I don't have it word for word, but this is what I can remember him saying. He said, young people, you'll be at a party, and there'll be dancing and loud music, and it will seem that everyone is having a great time. And then out of nowhere, and just for a fleeting moment, you will have a feeling deep inside of you. The feeling will be that this isn't right. Something's not right, and this isn't the purpose that I was made for. I can remember distinctly when this happened to me, and I wish I had heard the sermon then. I can remember I was doing what I wanted to do, and deep down there's an innate feeling that this cannot be it. This is not what we were meant to do. This is not what I was meant to live for. The day would come and the day would go, and it didn't matter what I did. It didn't matter if I gave myself pleasure, if I did what I wanted. I was still, at the end of the day, I was feeling broken. And when this feeling hit me, I got angry and I was very desperate, because I'd set my whole life up for this. Like, this was it. I got finally, and I got everything I wanted. I'm free. I'm far away from home. I've got all these friends. I can spend every weekend in the bars and clubs with my friends, and we're doing everything I wanted to do. And I feel broken. How can this be? They didn't tell me about this in the movies or the songs. They didn't tell me that Tuesday night I'd be drinking alone because I can't fill the void. They didn't tell me that I would be broken inside, and I couldn't do anything. I would go months without a full day of sobriety. It had gotten to that point, and I began to spiral out of control. And when these feelings got worse and worse, all I did was try to fill the hole with more substances and women and just the worst type of living, and those things only make that void deeper. And the feeling's overwhelming. It's hard to put so much emotion into one 20-minute section of your guys' day. I could go into the details of everything I did. I don't think that matters. I think at the end of the day, all that matters is if I can try to portray to you how low I got. I remember a time I was abusing some substances, and I took some. I didn't even know what it was, and it took me to a place where I didn't know that humans could get that low. I didn't know that a person could feel this bad. I didn't want to keep living at this point. I remember just, there's no way life can be this hard. Like, on the outside, everything looks great. Nothing's actually wrong in my life. I haven't lost any friends. I haven't lost any family. I've got a good job, and I'm making money, and I am just crushed inside. Something's not right. And I remember calling my sister the next day, and I was like, Hannah, it's like, I'm not okay. Like, something's wrong. Like, something's broken inside. And she goes, Judson, you know what it is. And I knew what she was going to say, and she goes, Jesus Christ is your only answer. And I still wasn't ready. My ego was too big. I couldn't hear it. So I got frustrated with her, and I said, this can't be it. There has to be something else. There has to be something else. And I wish I would have came to Christ then, but I didn't. About another year and a half went on, and I became bitter. I remember thinking multiple times, I'm the most miserable person in the world. There's no one lower than me. And I promise you this, one thing you don't want to be is a bitter, angry atheist. It's not a fun place to be. I just believed everything happened by random chance. By a roll of the dice, my day would be planned out. There's nothing other than chance. And through this time, I became very bitter at Christians and anyone who would tell me about Christ. My family would, they would reach out to me, and they would send me verses, and they would say they're praying for me, and I would tell them not to waste their time. I wouldn't read what they would have to send me. I would tell my friends, I don't want to hear about that. That's not real. If someone would ask me if I believed in God, I wouldn't tell them I didn't believe in God. I would tell them I didn't believe in the idea of God. That's where I was at. And God forgive me for where I was at. I would constantly tear down anyone who brought the faith up to me. And I was miserable. And then I remember there was a day, I spent a lot of time fishing. I was at the beach, and I was staring out. It was a beautiful morning. And I'm looking at just the waves crash. There has to be a creator, right? There has to be. I mean, creation screams for a creator. I have parents. These fish I catch have fish parents. And everyone has, someone comes from something. This has to have come from someone. So I'm like, it can't be Christianity, though. So I buy a Quran. I dive into Buddhism. I bought a Book of Mormon, which was a total waste of time. should probably add that in there. But I opened the Bible I had. I went through them all. And at the end of it, I said, Christianity is the only one that makes any sense to me. But I wasn't ready. I still wasn't able to accept it. I didn't want to give up my sin. I didn't want to drop my ego because I had told my whole family. My uncle Josh, he's a preacher in Xenia. And recently he had a sermon where he said, we've got, I think he said, 83 people in our family, and they all profess to be a Christian. Well, at one time it was 82, and I was the one who went against everybody. I told them they're all wrong, and I'm right. So you can imagine what kind of ego you have to tell everyone in your family. My dad and two uncles are pastors, and I thought I knew more than all of them. But this all changed in last April. I came home on a trip to Ohio. I still wasn't ready to have a conversation about Christ or becoming a Christian, but I did want to have a conversation with my dad because I knew our relationship wasn't where it should be. So I reached out to him and I said, Dad, I want to sit down. I don't want to talk about Christ. I don't want to talk about Christianity. I want to talk about our relationship. And he said, okay. So we sat down, and as you can guess, he did bring up Jesus Christ. And if you know him, you know it was coming up. I knew he was going to bring it up. And we went back and forth some, and I was giving him my reasons of why I didn't believe. And the tensions rose, and I was about to stand up and go out to my car and drive down to South Carolina, as I had done many times before. I didn't have to hear that conversation. I didn't live with him anymore. I could leave. But for the first time, something inside of me was like, Judson, you are broken inside. You know there's nothing else down there for you. If you sit here and listen to this or don't, it's not going to change how you feel right now. Just sit here and hear what he has to say. So for the first time, I opened my ears, and I said, okay. And I listened to him for a little bit. And he said, and he started telling me about Jesus Christ and how Jesus came for the 99. He left the 99 for the one. He came for the least, the lost, and the broken. And that was me. I was broken inside. I'd done everything I can to build myself up and live my life, and all it brought was pain and brokenness. And I was like, Jesus came for me? He came for everyone, and he came for the lost. And it was like the first time I had ever heard it. And I broke down, and I cried like I've never cried before. And I cried out to Jesus to forgive my sins. And it was at that moment that God finally gave me peace. For the first time in my life, I felt peace, a feeling I'd never known before. The void I felt inside was a cross-sized hole that I had not realized. I tried to fill it with everything else, but Jesus Christ was the only answer. Satan tells us the biggest lie of all, that pleasure in money, material, and living for the now can satisfy us, but it's simply not true. The only thing that sin does is separate us. It separates us from the only true answer there is to find in life, and that's Jesus Christ. And that's my testimony. Pastor Carter asked me to answer a couple questions. So I'll do that now. I'm not a parent, but I was a prodigal and I was away from the Lord. And I know what helped. And if there's some of you out here today who have children who's away, or you have friends who's away, or someone you hardly know, or someone you love as a brother, please do not give up on them. Please do not give up on them. Because I've got a family an hour and a half away who didn't give up on me. They prayed for me every day. And thankfully to them, and through God, I was able to return. We have to remain strong in our faith. If I would have come home and seen them, and they had dropped their cross, they had given up the faith, I would have seen that what they had was not real and was not true. And I never would have came back. They never wavered. And when I was at my lowest and in a moment of complete brokenness, I finally saw that what they had was real and genuine, and they had the only source of meaning. And I knew that what I had was not. Parents, we have to check our kids' motives. Jesus came and said in Matthew 5:21-22 that it's the motives in your heart that is what matters. Are your children just acting like Christians because you told them to, or do they actually believe their faith, because that is all that matters? As I close and maybe take up more of Pastor Carter's time than I told him I would, I want you to speak to the teens and youth here. I know that what the world seems to tell you is pretty on the outside. I know it seems to be the cool thing to do, but I promise you, and this, if this is all you hear today, there is no meaning there, that you will not find lasting fulfillment. You will have fun in the moment, but then that drains, and it will drain you into there is nothing left. And then the last thing I want to close with is I know some of you will listen to this and maybe it'll do something. I've been praying for the last weeks and month that it does. But I know that some of you will hear this and it will mean nothing, because I was right there and it meant nothing to me. And all I ask is, when you are in your moment of brokenness, to remember that Jesus Christ is still there for you.
So I asked Judson to stay up here for just a second. So Judson, let's just talk, you and me talk, all right? Yeah. Forget there's anybody else in the room. Let's just talk, all right? So what did your parents do? You know, and I said to Judson, like, without being critical of anybody, because, you know, it's easy enough when young people, adults, when we go running out of the church, it's like, well, you know, this person stinks and that person stinks and my parents weren't what they ought to be and blah, blah, blah. Because when you make up your mind to do something, you just are trying to find excuse, right? God said to Job, will you condemn me that you may be just? And that's our tendency. But just, you know, without being critical of anybody, things that the devil used to drive you away from Jesus in the church, what would you say?
Well, I think a big thing, I think a big thing is, it's like what I filled myself with. I was at church every time the doors were open, but every minute that I wasn't, I was listening to certain types of music, and I was just consuming everything the world had to offer. And I think that's what drew me away the most, is I was just constantly filling myself and looking towards what I wanted from the world. So I would say that was the biggest thing.
And what did your parents do that you think was the best thing to help you return?
The best thing, it would definitely be that they didn't waver. Because there was times that they would send me verses, they'd send me sermons, and just truthfully, I didn't listen. I wouldn't read it. That's just where I was at. But they showed me the love of Christ through their actions and their persistency and their prayer. So whenever I was home, it was they would, how are you doing? Like, what's going on here? And they would like ask how I was. And then the biggest thing is I saw the meaning and purpose they had in their life. And that was what if I could have one sentence to describe the first 22 years of my life, it was just lack of meaning, lack of purpose. And I saw that they had that. So when I see that and I'm at my lowest and brokenest, I can look back at them and I go, it's Sunday morning, I'm feeling horrible, but I know they're waking up, they were up hours ago, and they're going to church, and their life has meaning and purpose.
What did the church do well when you came back?
That was one thing that I wasn't sure how they would react, because I grew up in the church. And I was a liar for a long time. I was a Christian actor. And I thought that at least one or two people would be like, hey, man, I thought you were saved the whole time. Like, what was this? Not a single person. I had hundreds of people reach out to me and message me and talk to me that day when I came back. And they were just like, hey, we've been praying for you for a long time. We love you, and we're just glad you're back. And it was 100% acceptance.
Cool. And last thing, what advice would you give to anyone here today that's on the border walking away? Because we have a few. I mean, we have a few that are here today.
Yeah.
Like, and you had said to me when we were talking on the phone, you said something like, I think I needed to just go live that life for a while because I was so sure that I wasn't listening, and I was so sure that, and then you went that way and found out.
One thing, in my late teens, early teens, I had convinced myself that I wasn't a Christian, but I never really did the due diligence of reading the Bible or looking into other religions. So I would listen to atheists and like, yeah, he sounds smart. And I wouldn't give it the proper credit, because the truth is we do live in a real world with real consequences. You owe it to yourself and to God and to everyone in this room to actually pursue and read the Bible and find out the truth. But you can search your whole life and you won't find meaning. You won't find the purpose. You can do everything you want to do, and you're not going to find what you're looking for. The only thing is the cross. So,
I thought it was interesting when I first got into doing some, you know, rehab, trying to get drug rehab. What do I know about drug rehab? I've never done drugs, you know, and here I am thrust into this situation, and I'm like sitting at the courthouse with folks that are in jail who have spent a lot of their life with drug addiction. And I still remember, I'm like, why do you guys like do this? Why do you go that route? And I still remember them saying to me, and they all agreed, we first started using drugs because it was fun. And then we continued to use drugs to hide from the person that we had become by using drugs.
Yeah.
They said because we were horrible people living horrible lives, and we continued to do drugs to cover up, temporarily cover up how awful our life had become. You know, and that's the thing that I think is so important about Judson's testimony is, like, sin is fun for a little while, but it always has consequences. And that life that the devil promises you, listen to me, if you're here and you're checked out and you're about to, as soon as you can, you're going to run away from the Christian faith. What we're telling you is, you can have fun, but when sin is finished, it brings forth death. And that life doesn't end well. It doesn't end well here, and it certainly doesn't end well in eternity. Thank you. It's interesting. We know the story of the prodigal son. Most of us, the boy that he thought it was better out there in the world, and he's going to run away from home, and then he comes back, right? But what's before that? See, because context means a lot. Like, what's before? Did you ever ask yourself that question? Context is, what does it say before? What's it say after? Who is it written by? You know, who is it written to? What's interesting to me is this, as I began to really look at this text and think about, like, what was it that made the prodigal son come back home? Well, we know that he came to himself, right? And there's that moment that you have to come to yourself. And Judson had the beginning of that moment standing there, you know, looking out on the Atlantic Ocean. But really, when he was sitting in his dad's office, that's when he really, you know, he began to really seek to come to himself. That life, Judson, you know that life. Like, it's empty, right? And you know, sometimes it's a shame with us that we've got to see, because we're, you know, we've got to see for ourselves. But we also have to be honest enough with ourselves that if we're there, and if you're there today and you find out that life is empty, that you got to be honest enough to go, well, then this isn't a life that I should be living. But what's interesting to me is that I heard a statement years ago. I say it from time to time as I'm preaching, that for human beings to get involved in something, that it has to possess two qualities. Number one, it has to be desirable. And I almost always use the example, like, you know, a Chevy Chevette. The younger generation, most of them probably don't even know what a Chevy Chevette is. And it was a horrible little car that got really good gas mileage, all right? And most of us don't drive. The reason you don't know what a Chevy Chevette is, because nobody hardly drives a Chevy Chevette anymore, because they quit making them. But most of us don't drive them. And not because it wasn't affordable. The problem was it wasn't desirable. You know, and for a lot of us, if we could afford a Corvette, now we're getting into a different category, right? Or a Lamborghini or a Ford Raptor for a lot of us country folks. Like, that'd be pretty cool. So something has to be desirable, and then it also needs to be reachable, or in other words, attainable. That for us to really get involved in something, what we have are things that are desirable to some degree, and then they are attainable. And the reason that we don't have things that are sometimes nicer than what we have, it's not because they're not desirable, it's just that they're not attainable. So when you understand, you got to understand human nature at the very core of us, whether we're a saved person or a lost person, we're looking for desirable and then also attainable. So when we talk about somebody coming back, right, attainable, and one of the great questions is always for a prodigal, like, if I go back, would they take me back? What if I went back? And there have been so many people that have come through this ministry over the years and affiliated with this ministry. Like, you know, how is it with your mom and dad? And be like, horrible. They wouldn't let me come back for anything. So for prodigals to come home, now listen closely, they have to have really two things. They have to see two things. Number one, they have to believe that it's better back there. You take that in the context of a local church, that they have to believe that what God has to offer here and through this ministry is better than what they can get somewhere else. And two, that they would be welcome here, that people would want them here. That's why one of my questions is, how did the people from the church treat you? What do you see when you came back? And they all took me back. Because for people at the very core of our nature, even as people, it's got to be, there has to be something here of value, desirable, and then it needs to be attainable. Now look at the scriptures, because I find this very interesting. Then we'll back up. The story of the prodigal son begins in verse number 11. But when you go all the way back to 15, verse 1, that's when we find some context. Well, what is the context? Well, the context is, then drew near unto him, unto Jesus, all the publicans and sinners. Now that's an interesting statement. So here's Jesus, he's doing ministry, and the crowd that comes around that day that's really interested in him are all the publicans, people that are, because of their job, because of what they do, because of their name, of their reputation, of what they are normally like, people don't want anything to do with them. So here are, in a sense, are some of these, even though there a lot of them were wealthy because they extorted money from people, they're an undesirable group. So here are the publicans, and then here are the sinners. And these folks gather around Jesus, and here's the holy, only begotten Son of God, getting ready to address the publicans and sinners, and all of them have gathered around because they want to hear what Jesus has to say. And then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And then you got the religious crowd, and the Pharisees and scribes, they murmured, saying, "This man receives sinners, and he eats with them." Now, here's Jesus' opportunity. Now, what is the only begotten Son of God, God in a human flesh, and he has an opportunity to open his mouth and say anything that he can and wants to this publicans and sinners, and he could have opened his mouth and he could have said, "I'm going to tell you right now, you know, point number one, you all are a bunch of horrible people. And all y'all, like, deserve to go to hell and, you know, should probably go to hell. And, you know, God doesn't even want you." But that's not what he says at all. In fact, it's very interesting to me that when you understand at the very core of the nature of human beings, that we generally, even though the law convicts people of their need for a savior, at the very same time, at the core of our nature, we need to know that God would God even take me? And I can't tell you how many people over the years that I've witnessed to personally, and they're like, "Listen, you know, number one, first of all, I want to tell you, God doesn't even want me. God wouldn't take me." This is, people say it in different ways. One way they say it is, "If I would go to church, the roof would fall in. If I would go to church, the place would burn down. You know, the church doesn't want me. God doesn't want me. I'm living such a horrible life." And so it's very interesting to me that the very story that Judson is talking about, that Billy Graham spoke about when he's talking to young people about the 90 and 9, is the first parable that Jesus tells. Before he ever told the story of the prodigal son, in verse number 3, he spake this parable unto them, saying, "What man of you having 100 sheep?" So he's like, you think, I want you to engage your mind. If you're here, I'm going to ask you to engage your mind. That we don't challenge you to come here and listen to the word of God and sit here and not think like a bunch of sheeple, that we just hear what the preacher has to say and we all nod our head and go, "Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah." No, that's not what we're asking. You need to engage your mind. You need to think. "Which of you, if you had 100 sheep, that if you would lose one of them," Jesus said, "wouldn't you leave the 99 in the wilderness and wouldn't you go after that sheep that was lost? And how long would you go after that sheep until you found it?" Verse 4, "What man of you, if you have 100 sheep and you lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and you go go after that which was lost until you find it? And then when you find it," in verse number 5, "and when you found it," are you looking at verse number 5, chapter 15, verse 5, "you say, you're a horrible sheep, and, you know, if you ever run away again, I'm never coming after you again." Is that what he's saying? No, that's not what you do. When you find the sheep, you're excited about finding the sheep. And he takes that sheep, and he puts that sheep on his shoulder. And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders. And what does he do? He rejoices. He rejoices. What's the message Jesus is telling? He's like, you know, you guys, if you had 100 sheep and one of them wandered away, wouldn't you go after it until you found it? Yes or no? Sure we would. And when you find it, would you be mad? You're a horrible sheep. Don't you ever run away again? And I hate your guts? No, you're rejoicing.
And you'd pick that little sheep, you put it over top of your shoulders, and you're going to carry it back home, and you're rejoicing. In fact, when you get back home, verse number 6, and when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, and he says unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. And now other people are excited. You get back home because this is a big deal, and we're excited that you're back. You know, and this is the thing. Because if people are going to want to go to something, they have to know that it's attainable. And would God take me back? And not only, this is what Jesus is telling this group of publicans and sinners. He's like, I'm telling you, not only would he take you back, I'm telling you that he would pursue after you. And he would pursue after you until he found you. And then when he found you, he'd lovingly put you up on his shoulders. He'd carry you back home and he would rejoice. And then when he got back home, he would tell all his friends and neighbors to come over and rejoice because his sheep that was lost is found. Would God take you back? Absolutely, he would take you back. Would he take you back, and would he be mean to you and grumpy with you? Absolutely not. In fact, in verse 7, he says, I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner, just in case you think we're just talking about sheep here. He's like, I'm telling you that likewise, in the same manner, there's joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. And just in case they weren't listening to this story in verse number 8, either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, she does not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently until she find it? And of course, all of us would say, if you had 10 silver pieces or 10 gold pieces, sure, if we lost one, we'd clean up the house until we found it, wouldn't we? And when she's found it, she calls her friends and her neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I had lost. Likewise, I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of angels, the angels of God, over one sinner that repents. There's joy. And people need to know that God would welcome me back. That it's attainable. The question then is it desirable? Would I want to go back? And this is why I believe the devil works so hard to try to get our children to grow up in circumstances where they have a bad attitude about the church that they attend, where they have a bad attitude about the preacher, where they have a bad attitude about the youth workers or the junior church teachers, because he's trying to make it in their mind that is a horrible place. And that preacher, he's a horrible preacher, and the people that go to church are all a bunch of hypocrites, and all that church wants is your money. And besides, those people wouldn't want you back there anyway, which is, you know, there are hypocrites in church, no doubt about it. But the fact is that we do want people here. And when we're thankful, when one person even turns and repents toward the Lord and comes back, and we ought to have like the open arms. You think about even in your own family. This is why the devil works so hard to try to turn children against their father and children against their mother and parents against their kids. Because who in the world would want to go back home to parents that didn't even want them around? And this is why, you know, one of the great provocations is, hey, son, you get out of here. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Don't you ever come back here. I don't ever want you around. And man, can the devil replay that a million times in a person's head. Which is a complete opposite of what needs to be really said, which is, hey, you're leaving today. It's breaking our heart, but I want you to know that you can come back. Even with a church, when families leave here, and we have that, we go through that, and we've gone through that for 26 years, that if families leave here and they go, you know, the grass is greener over there, the question is, Do they think that they could come back here if they see that it's not greener over there? I tell you, likewise, there's joy in heaven over one sinner that repents more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. In verse 10, likewise, I say unto you that there's joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repents. Which leads us into verse number 11, and he said, a certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. And he divided unto them, he gave to both of them his living. Not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country, and there he wasted his substance with riotous living. He's having a party. Verse 14, and when he had spent all, the timing was, there arose a mighty famine in the land, and he began to be in want. And he went and he joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent into his fields, which sent him into his fields to feed the
pigs this wine. And he would fain, he greatly desired to have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. In verse 17, this turning point, and when he came to himself, everyone, before they ever get turned and they go back going the right direction, they have to come to themselves. It's amazing that if you would do a study of the scriptures and just study of that life of sin, and listen, every one of us have lived the life of sin to one degree or another, that before we ever get turned around and we go the right direction, there has to be a change in our mindset and in our heart. And he came to himself. Like, can you imagine? And you're him, and you're out there, and your inheritance, you've completely wasted your inheritance. You ran away from home. You've wasted all of your inheritance on a big party. And now that the money's gone, nobody wants anything to do with you. And you've come to this point in your life, really. And what he's met with here is that when he's come to the end of this partying lifestyle, that and he's down to nothing, he's really introduced to a life of misery. And nobody wants anything to do with him. And his job is he gets to feed pigs, and he's so hungry that he would desire to feed himself with the hog food. And it was at that point when he gets to that he wakes up, in a sense, and he comes to himself and he says, like, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? Because it's better back home. Because you got to come to terms with it. It's got to be desirable. That I want to go back home. Number one, it's better. Number two, that I would be welcome back there. Let me say it this way. That our kids know that, you know, they could come back and that we would welcome them. And the delicate balance of not approving of their lifestyle that they're living, but they know if they ever do come to their right mind and their senses on this issue, that the first place they could go that they would be welcome would be back to mom and dad that love them dearly. That in church, that even though these kids grow up in church, and if they choose to go out and, you know, do what Judson did, and they go out and they try to find a different way that they think is a better way, that they would know that they could come back here. And that there would be a preacher in a congregation that would love them, that would care about them, and that we would welcome them back with loving arms. And that it's actually better here. That living a life serving God, that what God has to offer is so much better than what the world has to offer. And these are the things that we have to have. And this is why in dealing with our kids, and mom and dad, listen closely, this is why in dealing with our kids, they've got to know that it's better, right? And they have to know that they're welcome. Desirable and attainable. And when he came to himself, and he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? And then he said, I will arise, and I'll go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me. It's interesting that when he comes back home, Warren Wiersbe, give him credit, because what a great statement when he said these words. Everything that the younger son had hoped to find in the far country, everything that the younger son had hoped to find in the far country, he actually discovered back home. Everything that he hoped to find in the far country, he discovered back home. Clothes, jewelry, friends, joyful celebration, love, and assurance of the future. And what made the difference? That he went from being the son that said, Father, give me, to being the son that came home and said, Father, make me. You ever think about that? That he went from being the son that said, Father, give me my inheritance, to being the son that said, Father, make me as one of your hired servants. And he was willing to be a servant. In the far country, Wiersbe said, the prodigal learned the meaning of misery. But back home, he discovered the meaning of mercy. Father, I've sinned against heaven and before thee. I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants.
He arose and came to his father, and when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and he kissed him. Hey, publicans and sinners, you get this? That the father came and was very accepting of him. In fact, pursued to go meet him and hugged him and gave him a kiss. And in verse number 21, and the son said unto the father, I've sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. But his father said unto the servants, bring forth the best robe, amen, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf. Listen, the party is on, and kill it, and let us eat, and we're going to be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. And what we see in the story of the prodigal is we see welcoming back. We see joy in heaven. And if you're here and you are a lost person that you haven't yet turned to Christ as Savior, I'm telling you, God would take you. He would welcome you back. He would make you a part of the family. And everything that you've been chasing after out there in the world, thinking that they had the answers, the answer has been actually right here in this place the whole time. And it's in a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And you can go from misery to being a person of mercy. And I've been around, you know, the world, and many of us have lived that life of a prodigal, much more so than even I have lived it. But what we know is that life that promises a party, that we really can play the part of I'm having so much fun while we are so miserable on the inside. And how in the world people can be like a party today, but go home and want to end their life. Because that life doesn't give what it promises. But God does. But you got to come. Would he take me? Absolutely. Is it better there? So much better. Then come.